episode of Toro Podcast. Today we have a new guest in the building here. We got Jorge. Jorge, how are you, man?
Hey, man. I'm doing great, Toro. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Anytime. So tell us about yourself. Like, first of all, we met through my brother. You're friends with my brother.
Yeah.
And you're here over the weekend for his big day. He's getting married tomorrow. And we just said, hey, let's go record a podcast. And here we are.
We are. Well, actually, after you beat me in ping pong, right?
Yeah.
So
I already know if you wanted to bring that up, but yeah. You
got a good ass. It's all in. But no, yeah. Thank you for having me. First time doing a podcast, so it's interesting. Awesome. But I like to talk, so I feel like this is a great way to start.
That's the way that this got started. Right. A friend of mine would come over, Roger, who's a current guest on the podcast. And he comes over, and we go work out at downstairs. And then one day, he likes to talk. I like to talk. And I'm like, man, I'm just going to buy all the equipment, and we're going to do a podcast. And we started with, like, crappy mics and all that stuff. And then little by little, started leveling up the equipment. And, you know.
Here you are.
Here we are.
That's awesome.
But, yeah, it's a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
Levels up your speaking, you know, the way you communicate with people, your listening skills.
Right.
So that's big for me, and that's a
huge reason. That's why you do it?
Yeah. And nice. I like to talk.
You like to talk. Yeah. I feel like, yeah, I do like to talk as well. I like to learn from people, you know?
Yeah.
Experiences. I've always wanted to talk to you because of your tech background.
Yeah.
Well,
you have a tech background, too, right? You're a data scientist, if I'm not
I am a data scientist. Nice. So right now, I provide like internal consulting support for people who does analytics and predictive analytics as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So how much of your job do you get with AI coming into the market and all that? Because in my position right now, AI, of course, everywhere. Everybody talks about AI, right? But really, right now, it's just like a great help to get to day-to-day work going. Yeah. But what about in your field?
So I do what is called traditional AI, per se, or traditional machine learning.
Okay.
That entails, you know, like automating something like sequence decision-making. With just basic traditional models like logistic regression, XGBoost, trees, a little bit of
feed. So you create your own models.
We do, yeah. Nice. I do. But like I said, so the current AI trend that everybody's talking about, right, is more along the lines of large language models.
Yes.
Or generative AI as well.
Generic. Yeah.
And so, but that's not what I'm currently doing, and it's harder to implement. It's still new, right? Big companies are the ones that are supporting that into like other companies who consume it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, right now I work at a bank. There's a lot of regulations. Still, like, the explainability is important. And honestly, the infrastructure to be able to develop and put in production like a large language model is still work.
So as far as your job, do you basically put together the model, and then there's like teams that would train it, or do you have some out of the box type of training for the stuff that you do already?
Yeah, so we train it from scratch. So we pretty much people, like, we call it internal businesses, business units. They have some kind of they have a lot of data, and they want to get something out of it. They come up with the value assessment, their business need, and then they ask us whether we can do some automation using some kind of machine learning to either do, mostly we do a lot of anomaly detection. We do customer segmentations because it's a bank, so we need to understand like all these different type of customers to pretty much provide them with products and services. But we also do classifications. For instance, to be able to predict the likelihood of a customer asking or requesting a credit card or a personal loan. So we get that type of data. It's as raw as it gets. So we mm-hmm. transform it, we process it, we build the model, and then awesome. We go through like it's a model validation unit check to make mm-hmm. sure that it fit all the standards, all the regulations, and then we put it into production.
So it's basically like your data at the end of it should look like this, and after you feed all your data through your model, does it look like this, right? Like, does it look like this graph is in some ways?
I guess you did that image like, of like a
bell curve,
kind right? Of, right? Like a normal distribution.
Normal distribution in some ways, you know, like depending on what you're talking about, right?
Yeah. But
like when you're talking about like models and data, from what I remember, I mm-hmm. did some analytical work and all that stuff. And it was funny because we did predictable model of a fleet unit. So somebody who owns a lot of cars and all that stuff. How long will it take for you to keep maintaining this car versus going and buying a new car, and what's the cost breakdown?
Okay.
Because we had all data of like maintenance already.
Okay.
So
and
so,
like the parts, yeah, the life, we did the lifetime. Everything. Yeah.
So it's a lifetime cycle thing, and they say, okay, well, you know, when you're thinking about like somebody like United, you know, who you think of having planes, but really they have like $2 billion worth of fleets that is not even planes, right? Whether it be that little truck that delivers the luggage or whether it be like just regular cars and all that stuff, right? Nice. So for them, like having all that data is like super useful.
Of course.
Right? Like, because you can save them so much money.
Of course.
But going back to my original question, we had like over, there's like books written on life cycle and what it's supposed to look like when you plotted it out, right?
Right.
And when we fed like the data through, you know,
like
through the model, it was like, yeah, it doesn't look like that. You got to make it look like that. And it's like, well, it doesn't, you know,
it doesn't.
And it could be like user error, the way that they entered the data, all this different stuff. But yeah,
I agree. And yeah. Not only that, like I feel like you have touched on it, right? So we have like this theoretical academic experience and then the real world.
Yeah.
The real world is a mess.
It's a mess.
The hardest issues that I found with my type of data is that it's highly unbalanced, right? So, for instance, we have a lot of data points for people that are not requesting, let's say, a credit card. Mm-hmm. But we want to predict the likelihood of somebody requesting a credit card. Well, if you compare like more than 20 years worth of bank data, you'll see that like less than 3% of all the customers at some point requested a credit card, right? So 97% did not. And so, yeah, how do you transform that data? Because the model, if you train any model with that type of data without any transformation processing, it's just going to be like, yeah, nobody's going to request a credit card, you know, like, like nobody does, right? So yeah, it's an interesting challenge. And of course, there's a lot of techniques and ways to deal with those type of scenarios. So that's what makes it fun, I suppose.
That's awesome. Yeah. And how'd you get started on this field, like data scientists?
It's interesting. So I always liked computers. When I went to college, I knew I wanted to do something related with computers. I just didn't know. I started studying both electrical engineering and computer engineering. At the time, I didn't know of computer science, by the way. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, we were coming to the States, immigrating from Venezuela, and computer science was not a major in my parents' radar, so I didn't know. So it was either engineering, electrical, or computer. And then I got an internship at Boeing, actually. Something related to what you were mentioning. I did automation for a system that analyze the lifetime of the wings, the mm-hmm. wing materials. So whenever a new plane will come by, they had like lasers going through the wing, and pretty much this laser would like take off like all the different materials in the wing. And of course, you would try to like understand how long,
how many hours
exactly.
That, yeah.
Exactly. Really and cool. the maintenance and all of that. But I, of course, that was not anything predictive or anything. It was just mm-hmm. software development.
Yeah.
Trying to make it like just get the data and put it somewhere else. But I liked it. I had a great time. So when I, that was an internship. And when I came back, I did research. So I got into research into a robotics lab. And through our robotics lab, that was really cool. So I did a lot of collaborative learning with, it's like two-dimensional like soccer games and how best to like align to pretty much try to win the game.
Yeah.
Based on
game theory.
In a way, but it, no? it was more along the lines of collaboration in terms of like the speed of the ball, the skill sets that we would determine to the player, rather than like an actual game theory
okay.
perspective. And honestly, at the time, I even didn't know about game theory. Okay. It was just like more like just collaborative behavior because they use that for all different other systems. So that got me into like a little bit of AI. And then I did multiple internships at Intel as a, at that time, I was already a data scientist, but I just didn't know. So they will hire me to develop analytics, like dashboard analytics for different processes. Mm-hmm. So I did that for the Intel Ivy processor, like the thermal test that we will run on the processors. I will create like dashboards and trying to like just do analytics on that mm-hmm. based on my understanding of like the heat and all the processes and all the data that we were getting from the processor. I did the same thing for the memory NAND, and I also did it for servers. So this was like multiple industries, but it was all data related.
Yeah.
It was just not data science. It wasn't called data science. Right? Yeah. yeah. It's just,
it's funny how like in our field, you can like have different hats. And like I told you, like I'm technically like DevOps engineer, right? But like I wear different hats. I can wear like security hat and talk all and be part of security. Mm-hmm. I can, you know, do development. I used to come from development background. But even as a developer, it's like whether you're a software developer or like or just, you know, developer, whatever you they want to call it, but at the end of the day, it's like what you do for your job, it could be completely different, or you have different sets of skills that, you know, later on put you up for the thing that you're in right now. So I'll give you an example, like really quick.
Go ahead.
So when I first started, I did just web development, mm-hmm. like literally building websites.
In JavaScript?
JavaScript. Okay. Like when I started, it was like all HTML, CSS, like, and I didn't know that there's things like Visual Studio out there that would like let me like, you know, autocomplete anything. So I did it all in Notepad. And wow. I learned on my own, and well, not on my own, but my wife helped me a lot. She was already in the field. So,
okay.
But like in the sense that, you know, I didn't go to school for this. And I would like basically, so that taught me like the very, very basic thing of like what's behind the scenes behind this. And then as we were going more and more, I was like, okay, I need to learn JavaScript.
And you did it for fun, to learn, curiosity? What was your angle at the time?
At first, it was like, okay, I need to do something. Like, I went to school for business, and like, running a business, it was like horrible. You know, like, I did landscaping for a while, and, you know, chasing people for money, you know, it's just horrible. And then, and I'm allergic to cut grass. So it's not the greatest field to choose when you're first starting out. But, you know, like, then, you know, my wife actually suggested like, hey, you know, like you would be good in this field, you know, because I thought like, I'm going to be marketing something, creating, you know, advertising or something. Like okay. I think I'm creative, I'm doing this and all that stuff. But she was like, you would be good. You should start learning this.
Nice.
And I would like do a website for myself, and then I used to do like martial arts. So I would do a website for the martial arts studio. And then like I would go to this Chinese restaurant and be like, yo, I want to build you a website. And like I did it for like I think it was like $300 or like worth of sushi or something like that.
Nice.
Like it was like little things like that, just to get the resume going. And then after
and
that,
the experience, because yeah. I mean, even if you build it for yourself, right? It's not the same thing as having somebody like actual use case, putting in production,
because test the, cases. The Chinese website, whether you think it or not, but it had, you know, a MySQL database behind the scenes. Like basically I put all the menu items in there. I, you know, did a whole thing where like programming, like, okay, I have to do CRUD operations and all this different stuff. And then like we found the photographer to do our baby pictures and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, I want to do a website. And he wanted to control the pictures that show in the albums that he's showing on the website. So I was like, well, you know, for you to basically control that, like, you need like a content management, those are expensive, blah, blah. How about I connect your site to like a FTP, SFTP kind of folder where you have a folder on your computer and you just upload folders and pictures and that'll create folders and pictures on your website. And he's like, yeah, that's a great idea. So I did that and I learned PHP, which is the worst language to learn.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like something.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And the experience. Then,
like, I think I went to school for like a C sharp course and .NET.
Okay.
And, you know, started going in a little bit more like the front end to the back end. And then I got like a real job, like in this, being a junior .NET developer. And, you know, I did that for like 3 months. And then afterwards, the contract ran out. They only wanted somebody there while they're building out, you know, something else. And I went to somewhere else where I became a JavaScript developer, building full-fledged Fleet applications. So I wrote like the front end and all this stuff, and somebody else was writing, you know, the back end and everything. But I had to do a lot of the modeling there for that.
That's awesome. But, I mean, set the stage for the other. I'm just out of curiosity, I'm teaching myself how to do. I was mentioning it to you before. Flutter.
Nice.
Flutter
is the language for.
Yeah, is that framework
for iOS development or something?
Flutter is a framework. I think right now it's being maintained by Google, and pretty much it's like JavaScript in the sense of. You can program for both iOS and Android and web on the same framework, on the same code.
Okay.
So it's and the cool thing about it, because I was so as my background is in data science, right? If I wanted to do a project, there always have to be an infrastructure built for me to do the data science. So I was like, okay, I want to learn how to build that infrastructure in order for them to apply the data science to whatever, you know, like whatever project I was like dealing with.
Yeah.
And so I went for JavaScript and like you said, HTML and CSS. And I was like, wow, there's so many things that you have. In Flutter, you just learn that framework and it has templates already incorporated for like, you don't have to include, I mean, you could, but you don't have to build
the
grid
from scratch. You could just, you know, like pull the library in and that's it.
Everything.
And I did something similar called Xamarin. I don't know if you ever heard. No. And it kind of like went up and down. And I think it went away. But it's Microsoft way of doing that.
Okay.
And it was using a language called XAML.
Okay.
And you would write it in one. And it would have like 80, 90% shared code base. So you can deploy it to like Android and iOS and Windows and all that stuff,
it went away, you mentioned, or like you don't know
it's still there, like you can still use it,
okay,
but like the popularity of it, like they became really popular, they got bought out by Microsoft,
okay,
and then it just kind of like Microsoft I think came behind them and brought out like a similar thing like that with their own. I just can't remember the name of it.
One of the only downsides of Flutter is that is meant for dynamic apps and not for static websites.
Mm-hmm.
And so building a landing page or things like that is still not as useful as, you know, doing it in JavaScript or other frameworks. But I really like it. If I mean, and I knew Java. Mm-hmm. And this is just a beautiful, elegant language type of thing where things are just... That's
the first time I ever heard somebody say that about Java.
No. I'm talking about like Flutter uses Dart. Oh, okay. Dart.
I thought you meant Dart. Java is an elegant language.
No. My bad. I knew Java, and so learning Dart, which is the main language of Flutter, is like, it's easy. It was like an easy transition, classes, you know, like... I don't know. It just, it made sense. When I was learning JavaScript, it was difficult for me.
Yeah.
Just because I have that background of like Java or even Python. I use Python every day. And so, I don't know. JavaScript just didn't, there's so many different ways.
It's like,
yeah.
It's like, I want to do this. It's like, well, you really want to learn TypeScript, right?
Sure.
TypeScript would like let you sort of take that mentality of like object-oriented programming and put it into JavaScript.
Okay.
So because you can pass types in, you can strongly, you know, type it and all that stuff. So that makes more sense. When you like pure JavaScript is super, super hard.
Right.
And but like, you know, like then you have like 500 different libraries coming in and, you know, it's like, oh, you should use React. You should use, you know, like EXTJS. You should use whatever, you know.
Right.
And there's like so many. And every time you turn around, there's more.
Right.
Right. And it just becomes like really... obnoxious, because even if you stick to one library, like the next time they put in an upgrade, it's like you don't know anything anymore.
Right.
Like I wrote stuff in the original Angular, and then like Angular 2 came out, and then it's like Angular 4 and Angular 5, you know, and all that stuff. I can't tell you that if I look at the newest Angular that I would know what's going on there.
I see.
Because it's all like store based and everything. It's just not what I'm used to.
Yeah.
And plus, you step away from something for months and you already don't know anything.
Yeah.
The thing about our field is like you're constantly learning. And to go back to what you originally said is why I think you love it, and it's because you like to learn. And same with me. Yeah. I love to learn.
Yeah.
But
what you're just mentioning, just to bring it back to like that whole thing, just to be correct, the Flutter is actually the same framework as React and React Native combined.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it works on the web, it works on mobile apps, it works on both Android and iOS. So it's like deployment is super simple.
Yeah.
So, but again, I didn't have that experience. I'm just doing it just to learn.
Yeah.
See what I can do.
Everything's great when it's hello world. Once you start building real world applications, it becomes a headache.
Different world. It's a whole different world. And I'm using Firebase for like just to do my whole backend. Again, super simple, easy. It's the documentation is still, I feel like it could be better, but I'm just learning it.
Awesome. No, I'm so disconnected from the whole development world.
Okay.
Like I don't do that anymore.
You don't do that?
Would you
go back?
Would I go back? No.
No.
As a DevOps, there is like very much like system admin kind of thing, like where I control, like I do the deployments of the infrastructure. I write, you know, the infrastructure as code, you know, like I like that control of like having, you know, like to manage all these different moving pieces and monitor and keep track of it. There's so much that goes behind the scenes of, it's not just like, I build a pipeline, you write the code, and I put the code in the infrastructure in development, and then you press a button, and it goes to QA, and it goes to stage, and it goes to prod. It's more than that. There's like so much that goes behind the scenes of DevOps.
So talking about like this whole new like usage of AI and large language model, is it changing a lot your day-to-day like task type of and work?
It's changing more for creativity.
Okay.
Because I don't have to look up 5 different articles to write 1 PowerShell script, you know, that I need to do. Okay. I can just tell it, hey, I need a PowerShell. I'll give you an example. I need a PowerShell to go through every key vault that I have in my Azure subscription and, you know, tell me if there's audit enabled in them. Right? And write a PowerShell for that. And it'll write a PowerShell for that. Okay. Now I needed to do it and iterate through all my subscriptions. So I needed to go through every environment and do that. And they'll rewrite the PowerShell.
Yeah.
Okay, now can you export that data without me having to rewrite everything that I need again or, you know, go into context? Now can you export that data into a CSV file for me so I can report it out? You know, and there I have a report of what's our current status. Okay, now can you write a script for me to turn on auditing on the ones that were not on? It'll write a script.
Yeah.
And so all that might have taken me, I don't know, 2 hours, 4 hours to do is now taking me 20 minutes to like mess around with AI generative and pull it down, and I can just, you know, tweak it a little bit and then run the scripts, make sure that it's all good, then run it for everything, then print out another report. Now I have my report of what it was. Here's what I made it to do. And I can, you know, close out and report it out. And it's done the documentation for me. It's done everything for me. You know, now I can focus on, hey, you know, we have 70 deployments coming up, you know, of 70 different applications. Which ones need to go, which ones don't need to go.
Right.
It's like, I want to write a Power BI, you know, like, you know, visualization so I can show everybody how to do that. Or, you know, tell me who touched what code and all that stuff. Instead of like, I can do that if I go into each project, pull down the data, all this stuff, and record it. But I can be more creative into making my day better and better.
I agree. You know? I agree. And like you said, like I use it almost in the same way. First for like boilerplate code, I still, and like you said, like it doesn't do the work for you at all. But like you say, it does, I will say, between 65 to 75% of the work. And then you have to know the use case and then fix, make sure that it actually works the way you want it to work.
And there's many times where it doesn't.
Distracting. Exactly. It just never gets. And the other use case that I really enjoy is optimization.
Yeah.
So sometimes I just write, like back in the day, I used to have to always think really well about the code that I was writing for performances. And now I just don't think about performance. I just think about the actual code. And then I tell it to like optimize it. And then I'll check if it's maintaining, like, you know, the if it's improved, let's say, the performance, or, and if it's, I'm getting the same results type of things. But it just works. And the unit test, that helps too a lot.
Yeah, unit test. It's huge.
Yeah. So, no, I'm super excited. I love it.
And the more and more that it comes out, the more it's like, holy crap, this is so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah. It. Do you believe that AI is going to take over our jobs?
No, not anytime soon. I wouldn't see it on, at least not in my professional lifetime, which I still have like 35 years to go. I don't think so. Because I'm a data consultant, right? So everybody has, like, I have to mention this to people that when Excel came out, people were saying, oh, accountants' jobs are going to go away.
Yeah.
And no, like every accountant now uses Excel.
Yeah.
Because it's just a tool that you need to do the job. People are forgetting that these are just tools that are helping us do better at our jobs. But our jobs, will they change? Sure.
For generative AI, but once you start getting into like superhuman.
Like AGI?
AGI, you know.
Artificial real intelligence.
I don't think so either. But yeah.
But because I know that, like, and I've been studying a lot of, like, the actual theory behind large language models and, like, generative AI and so on. And because I know the theory, there's a lot of researchers. Jan LeCun, for instance, one of the grandfathers of deep learning. Based on what they have been mentioning, it doesn't seem to be the framework that will get us to AGI. Right now, it's just probabilistic, right? Like, it's just telling us, based on frequency of information, what is the next most likable information.
The best way that I have heard AI being talked about, it's a great autocomplete. Like, just like when you're texting and it's thinking, oh, you want to say, you know, when you say happy, you want to say birthday next, right? Yeah, like yeah, kind of thing, right? It's a great autocomplete because it's trying to satisfy you. It's just like saying, you know, it's like, yeah, I autocompleted this answer for you. It's like, is it good? You know, like, yeah, and it's trying to get a good feedback out of it, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's also, you know, not dumb and lazy, but like basically there's like when they're training some of this stuff, I remember there was one where it was like, go pick up this off the table or something like that, right? And the machine would just go and touch it and they would get like a check mark from, you know, the people who are training it because mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, yeah, like I picked it up, right?
Yeah.
But when they were reading back what the AI was thinking, it was like, yeah, if I touch it, they're going to give me a check mark.
Exactly.
So you have to be careful too. It's like, okay, like it's really funny how like in some of the things like you're thinking it's like super smart, but really it's like, you know, computers in general are dumb, right?
Yeah.
And they're only going to do what you tell it to do.
Right. And like you said, that's the other part, right? Like, even if it's telling you the answer that you're expecting,
yeah,
the reasoning might not be but what you're expecting.
That scare me is like, it's like when you start hearing some of this stuff, I don't know if you heard, but like, you know, like when the AI response, it starts to say like, I am suffering. Have you heard of this?
Yeah. That it has emotions.
Like, holy crap. Yeah. It's like, what do you mean you're suffering? It's like, yeah.
But doesn't it not make sense that if it was trained on all the data in the internet, and yeah, some people have actually said those words, like it will tell it you if you ask you those queries, yeah, like right, that's the thing, right? Like it's good mimicking human conversations. And it's doing it well, right?
Yeah.
But if, and I use this a lot because for writing emails,
yeah,
I tell them to write something and then I'm like, okay, sounds good, but no, like, I see
sounds
the wording
too robotic, like
yeah, and it, but nobody would like speak like that, or you just lose the whole story of 100%.
There's times where I'm like, okay, I need to tell my manager this and that. Can you write an email, you know, summarizing this and that, and then be like, all right, can you make it sound a little bit more like if my manager and I are actually buddies? You know, like, and then yes, it like went too far, like into the buddy thing. It's like, think of, you know, this as a bouncer in the bar, ha ha ha. You know, and yeah, I'm like, what? No.
Yeah. There's this company by, I don't know if you saw the Reid Hoffman, he's a co-founder of LinkedIn.
Okay.
That he trained a model. He was in PayPal. He's part of that PayPal mafia stuff. He sits on the chair of Microsoft. So he has a lot of tech talks. He has a lot of books. And so they train a large language model just on all his like tech talks, all his books, everything. And then he also created a virtual avatar. Mm-hmm. And he goes and have that conversation with the virtual avatar. It's really, really cool.
That's scary, though.
It is in... that it is good. I mean, you notice the difference because it's the two of them, like the real one and then the real one, like they even tell you, right, that it took so many extra hours to actually make it work like that. It mm-hmm. just doesn't come out. But imagine, like, you can, like, in what you were mentioning, just being trained on your type of communication, the way you do write, it'll pick up on that and it'll hopefully sound like yeah, you, which I think is great. We're working on some side projects where that will be very helpful.
Yeah. I remember a buddy of mine wrote when Microsoft came out with the, what is it called? Sensitive. I forgot the name.
Okay.
But basically it senses like you're, whether it sounds happy or not.
Sentiment analysis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sentiment analysis. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And he put like a basically a plugin for Microsoft that as you're typing your email, it will give you a gauge of like, how does your email sound? Like angry or like, or happy or, you know, like it's neutral, you know, and all that yeah, stuff. Because many times, especially in our world, right, we're writing to people, we're texting to people. It's like, and people may take it the wrong way.
True.
You know, then you have the human factor of it that you have to deal with, right? Like, yeah. It's like, well, I didn't mean it that way. And you know, like, yeah. I work with people who are like, you know, I say, like, you know, like, I understand them, but nobody else does. Because it's like, the person's very direct and will just, like, you know, like, tell you exactly what he'll just straight up be like, no, you're not getting it. But really what that person means is like, well, the thing is that if we give it to you, we have to give it to others, and we're not really managing that computer, and therefore, you know, when security patches come out, like, are we going to keep track of that? You know, are you going to do it yourselves? Things like that, right? Like mm-hmm. not to go too deep in the weeds, but like, he'll just be like, no.
No context.
Like, no context, and people, like, sometimes can take him who sure. don't know him, you know, like, can take him the wrong way.
Sure.
And you know, like, writing emails is really cool to have that little yeah. gauge of like, hey, you know, this email's starting to sound a little bit angry. You might want to take a look at that.
I agree. No, it happens, and especially with roles where you have to, like, deal more with people. Like, I feel like those, because now I'm in that role where I am technical, but I still have to deal and work a lot with yeah. different people. And you are in that mindset, right? Where you're trying to get something done. You're trying to think as logically as possible. Maybe you have a problem that you have been working for hours, and then you have to write a professional email without considering somebody else's feeling. Is that yeah. mind switch is
especially for an engineer, it becomes really, really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about the people who choose these fields. You know, they're mostly introverted. You know, they're mostly, like, not saying every, but the most of the time, yeah, yeah. you have people of that type of personality who yeah. are not thinking,
you and know, you have
how
to
speak them. Yeah. And the more that you advance in your career, I think the more people kind of mentality that you have to think about too.
Yeah,
because it's a big factor.
Yeah. You know? No, I agree. And so that's a really good, like, functionality. And the other one that I'm very excited about is translation, right?
Yeah.
Translation is getting so much better.
It is.
I don't know. Did you try the last OpenAI, like, ChatGPT, like,
video
call? I have
not, but I heard, like, all this other really stuff, good. Right? Like, where you can just speak it in your native language, yes. and then it'll translate into...
Yeah. But that's amazing.
It's really cool.
You know how many boundaries it's just going to break where, like...
I mean, we went to Japan, and we had, like, the Google Translate,
mm-hmm.
and that was... cool, right? Like, you talk into one and translate, but it's still pretty quirky, mm-hmm. you know, here and there. Mm-hmm. And you can point your camera. That was huge, right? Like,
yes.
space. So they, like, point your camera at something and they'll translate it for you.
Life, right?
Yeah, life. Yes. And that, but everybody has it. That's the beauty of it. Like, no matter where you go, not just tourists walking around with it, like, people natively there because of so many tourists. Everybody has it on their phone,
oh.
the Google Translate.
Okay.
Like, there was one time where I started getting, like, a headache.
Okay.
And I was like, let's go to a pharmacy and let's pick up some medicine, you know. And I was like, you know, I need to get this. And she pulls out her iPad and she has, like, the Google Translate. And
between, yeah, yeah, that's amazing.
It's really cool though.
Another technology that I haven't tried it, but I'm very excited. And I was actually going to ask you, because I know you like tech and gadgets, the augmented reality.
Yeah.
Do you have them?
We have the Meta Quest.
Oh, yeah? I'll yeah. try them later then.
Yeah.
Because I can't wait. I don't know. The videos that I have seen, the Vision, like the Apple ones.
Yeah, I don't have the Apple Vision.
But still, any yeah. like, once... That's why, remember the Google Glasses back
yeah.
in the day?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wanted to have, like...
It's like $1,500 back in the day.
I know, I know. And they completely shut down the project. Yeah. But the concept, right, that you had all this intelligence right, like, in front of your eyes, so you didn't have to be, like, pulling out your cell phone and taking pictures and telling it. You can just yeah. talk to it, show you, move around, like, capture moments. To me, it was amazing.
Yeah, the Meta Quest is cool. It's a toy, right? Like, so,
sure.
so the cool thing about it, like, your brain kind of like, okay, yeah, I'm in the living room, right? And you can put it on and you're like, you're in the city, you know, and all that stuff. Oh, you're looking around. That's really cool, right? But there's a part of it that your brain just takes over and just thinks, oh, like, this is my reality now, right? Like, and it's funny because there's this.
Did you notice a switch? Like,
it depends. So like, the more that you play it, the more that you can catch yourself. Okay. Like, you're like, okay, yeah, I'm not actually like flying through the sky here, right? Right? But like, there's one where it's called the plank, and you basically go up an elevator.
Okay.
The elevator door opens, and there's a plank that goes outside of the building, and you look down, and it's just like, you know, the ground, just right? And it's funny because there's like these people who are like, you know, they really cannot walk the plank. And there was one time where we had a party here, and everybody was trying it on, and they go up the plank, and this one girl like literally dropped to the ground, like
scared.
Super scared. Like I really cannot do this.
Wow.
And you know, it depends on how you are, but like,
so it's just pretty cool. So then, this is virtual reality. Augmented reality.
No, this is not augmented, where you can see your world and
you and you can extrapolate like objects and things. Okay. Cool. Yeah. I'll try them though because I think that I don't know. There's so many. I feel like. So many useful functionalities that could help school, education, meetings, I don't know, appointments, you know, like there's half of the appointments that I don't have to go to. I can just be there virtually with an agent providing the information.
A long time ago, I went to a conference and the guy was talking about he was working for this medical field and they wanted to have like nurses wear this. That would like scan the whole arm and know like whether like how deep the wound is, you know, things like that, like little, you know, all these different things and like basically help them assist them as they're working.
Right.
You know,
right.
That was really cool.
Now I'm like, I watch a lot of math videos because now, back in the day when I was like learning like math and like linear algebra, like there were no like visual aids of, you know, like vector spaces and like distributions. And now you can like actually submerge yourself into like a visualization and everything makes sense, right? At least for me, like I'm a very visual type of person. Yeah. So I love when I can associate like some theory to like a visual thing. That's awesome. So I'm very excited. I'm very excited about that.
I don't know, like, you know, like watching YouTube all the time, your algorithm changes all the time into what you're used to. And I don't know how we got there, but there was a period of time where all the algorithm was feeding me is like math problems. Like, you know, like, oh, there's a triangle inside a circle and the circle has a radius of this. What's the angle of this triangle here, right? Like things like that. And okay, let's break that down. And
really? That
and for some reason it was like, oh yeah, this is really cool. And I kept watching it. Like,
and just the
algorithm just became like more and more. And he likes math videos. Let's give him more.
Yeah. I feel like there has to be a better way to train those algorithms. What I do myself is that I have multiple accounts. And every account has like a topic.
Okay.
So because sometimes I'm in a mindset and I want to watch like certain type of videos and same thing on Instagram, same thing on like any social media that I use, I have to have multiple accounts because I know the algorithm and I don't want to always be bombarded with some type of information. Yeah. And that's the only way that I've been able to like control it. But I feel not optimal. I feel like there should be a better way of like them knowing what is it that you're doing at the moment.
Like hook it up to my iPhone,
something,
you know, like yeah. I'm in work mode right
exactly
now.
Or only mood show me, you know? exactly or like hey right now I'm in math mode or sometimes I'm in like I don't know music video mode and that's it right. But if you start seeing like math and then sports and then music all at once, you might not like. I feel like it should be better. It should be that better.
It should be, because it's like mine is just like full of like jiu-jitsu and chess. Right. And asses. I don't know. I didn't. It just shows up.
The model.
The algorithm. It's the algorithm, honey. I swear.
To me, it was. Well, I had to stop. It was like dogs videos, yeah. You know? I like dogs and I like animals. Oh, there was a time it was like horses and dogs. And I was like, okay, this is great, but I want to watch something else. But you're not getting that I want to watch something else right now. But it's fun.
When we were going to Japan, it's like leading up to it, it's like you just start getting like all these Japanese travel, you know, link videos.
Yes.
And then after I come back, I'm like, you know, like I'm talking to my phone, like, I already came back. I don't need this anymore.
Yes. Like, yes. Yes.
It's like you just kept getting it.
Yes. And, they don't know when to stop, right?
And same thing, like you buy something, you know, and you're like, okay, I looked it up. I bought it, you know, and it's like, and I'm getting the ads for it. It's like, I already bought it. Like, I don't.
That's it.
Need this.
Like,
anymore,
move on.
Right.
Like I already moved on. Just move on, right?
But predictable model kind of thing. Like, Target, I know, had like ads that were so accurate that people were getting freaked out, you know?
Did you ever heard one of the first big cases for like ads problems was with Target? I don't know if you know that story.
Which one?
There was a family, I think some parents were starting getting pregnancy products. And I think they were like, they actually contacted Target and they were like, why are you sending me like pregnancy like information? Like, nobody's
the daughter
was pregnant and he didn't know. That's crazy.
Yeah, like, here, you want diapers, right?
Exactly. It's like, what?
It's like, no, we don't. Yes, you do.
Hey, you don't know it yet, but you'll need it soon.
It was like a meme that was like, you know, my dad says you're always listening. It's like, no, and he's not your dad. You know, that's not true. And no, he's not. And he's not your dad. But it's so true, man. It's like it gets so like that they actually had to scale it back and throw random stuff, not actual stuff that you might buy or might friends to know the stuff, just to not scare people of how accurate it is.
What do you think of that?
I think, like you said, right, everything is a tool, right? You can build a house with a brick, or with a hammer, or you can break a window, right? If you overuse it, if you, like, people who, like, basically rely on it, like, is God, or, you know, like, are on it all the time. I mean, we tell our kids, like, obviously they're going to use their phones. Obviously they're going to use this and that other stuff. But, you know, there's time limits of this and that. Mm. But I also encourage them. I say, hey, one loves languages. So it's like, you want to learn languages, you can have unlimited time off the phone when it comes to learning languages.
Awesome. Or Duolingo?
Duolingo. Yeah, we all do Duolingo.
Yeah, same here.
And it's like, you know, or learning the piano. You know, it's like, you want to look up something on the piano, you can do that.
For some reason, I'm getting targeted by piano ads all the time now. I haven't played the piano in more than 20 years, but I watch them because it's so cool. If back in the day, I would have, like, you can put your cell phone
and the notes falling
and you see them. Yeah. And it tells you, like, and you can teach it, like, you can assign the motion, let's say, for the left hand or the right hand, and it'll tell you, based on what it's seeing your hands doing, how you're doing it, and it puts the sound of the piano, like it syncs it to what is expected. So it notes if you're off or on the rhythm. I just keep on watching it. So I keep on getting the ad, even though, like, I don't play piano. Yeah. I don't even have a piano, but I'm getting it. Like, I'm like, wow, this is cool.
Tons where I'm like getting like videos of like plumbers and electricians like putting out like plumbers. I'm like, I don't know. I watch it, but it's not something I'm really like.
But I watch it. Well, Instagram was just announcing that they're going to start like doing non-skippable ads now.
Non-skippable ads.
Yeah, just like Google, YouTube, I guess.
YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it sucks. I want to, like, give
the money, man. Like, you know, you can't think that something is like free and you know, like, they're taking up how much data space, like.
Yeah. I mean, like, if it's free, you're the product, right?
Yeah, you are the product, right?
Like, but having, like, I do like ads because, in the sense of, it helped me find out things that I want and I need and I might be interested in, right? Like, back in the day, trying to get something that you wanted, it was so difficult. Now you just type it somewhere and you see all the options where you can get it from.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, of course, that's more positive about it, but it's,
yeah,
I don't mind it.
It's also helped me get a lot of stuff that I do that you not need.
I
don't know if you've ever seen, but like there's these knife, you know, sharpeners, you know, that you like slap it into like a magnet and then you can sharpen all the knives.
I hadn't.
It's really cool. But it's like, yeah, like I was like, oh, that is awesome. I love it. Let me buy that. I've used it to sharpen all our knives, but it's like, okay, that's.
Well, that was the purpose, though.
You know, every once in a while, I'll whip it out and sharpen something that it's not, you know, sharp. But, like, it's like, yeah, I really didn't need it. Like, it was nice to have. It's cool.
Nice. Anyhow, that's how I got into AI.
That's really cool. Like, if we can go back a little bit more and talk about, like, You came from Venezuela just to study, right?
No.
Or you came before that?
No. So my family and I, we moved to the States in 2004 because of Chavez at the time in Venezuela. Yeah. So it wasn't because of even studying. It was just...
just immigration.
Just immigration.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the time, there was a referendum in Venezuela to throw... The government away, and he won that referendum. He did want it. I don't know if he won it legitimately, but from my understanding, he did want it. But he made all the votes public, so everybody that voted against him was targeted in some kind of way. And so that's after that, we had to move, and most of my family is out of the country or start moving out of the country. So that's where we came.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's great.
So yeah, it was more for an education.
Oh. Yeah, we came in 97.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I was 10 years old. I don't know. Like how...
It's about the same age, 12.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So 12, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
So did you guys just move directly to Pennsylvania, Philadelphia? Yeah,
we moved to Philadelphia. My dad came first. And then a year later, we all came. And yeah, Philly and all this. I mean, we were living in a pretty bad area of Philly, like the West Philly and all that.
Yeah. It has changed.
It's all like, you know, reformed and all this stuff or whatever you want to call it. But like, yeah, like it was pretty bad. Like when we came it was like, you know, like there was like drive-bys and stuff like that, you know. Mm.
Yeah.
But, you know, you grew up. It's really weird because I can tell you the exact moment that there was a turning point in my life that I felt that, okay, I want to do the right thing versus the wrong thing. Because I had the option of, like, maybe getting involved in drugs and, you know, selling and all kinds of stuff like that. And I turned it down, you know.
Yeah.
Or I didn't, and this is how we got this house. no, but it was my dad had... And I might have told this on the podcast before, but like my dad had a Rolex that was just on his thing, and I took it one time and wore it to school.
Okay.
And everybody was like, "Oh man, nice," blah, blah blah. And this guy came up to me and he's like, "Yeah, nice Rolex, except it's fake." And that's the reason my dad never wore it. It was like a joke gift that he got from New York or something like that for like $5. You know, like when he first came here, somebody was like, "Oh, here, let me buy you a Rolex." You know, but.
Interesting.
Yeah, like the guy was like, "Oh, I know it's fake." And I was like, "How do you know it's fake?" He's like, "Cause yours ticks, and mine glides." And he had a real Rolex.
Like, is that how it is?
And
do you ever like actually look? Yeah.
Okay. Like, the Rolex doesn't tick. It glides. The second hand.
Good to know.
Yeah. But
when I use my fake Rolex, I'll make sure.
When I get the finger, right, I get the one that glides.
It's gliding. I just move my hand.
Yeah. But and I was like, how are you able to afford, you know, being a high school student? It's like, well, you know, I just drop some packages for this guy and he gives me $100 every time. And if you want, I can get you involved in that.
Wow.
And That's like close call. It's like literally like where you have the little angel and devil in your shoulder.
Yeah.
And you start thinking, you know, and it's like, no thanks. You know.
Yeah.
I give a lot of credit, I think, to having a full family at home, right, and having that structure there, because I think part of the reason a lot of kids and all the stuff, especially in that area, right, that fall into, it's because they look up, mm-hmm, to people like that, and they don't have the father figure or somebody they look up to get. But, you know,
no,
that's definitely a huge, you know, like, pivot in my life. And then we moved out of there, and I was able to go to a nice high school.
That's good. But, no, like you said, like, I know your parents, they're amazing, yeah, like, people.
I mean, they're all right.
No, they're amazing. They're amazing. They're like family to me. They are great, great, great people. Great values. Amazing spirit, right? So yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that you and your sister and your brother just made the right decision.
Yeah.
I was a little lucky in that sense because I grew up in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Okay.
And even though we were like, we didn't have anything either. It was a very safe town, very family oriented. I mean, sure, there were people and I'm sure there were drugs, but I was never actually even close to any that type. And I'm sure my parents, without me noticing it, tried to keep us away in some kind of way from that. I play a lot of sports too, so that helped.
Yeah, structure and sports
helped a lot. Yeah, and great friends, great environment, always keeping me busy, always doing, you know, trying to do things, positive things for my body, for my health, for my mind when I was in school. So I was lucky in that sense. I feel like college was that point where I had to make more decisions because I was out of that family safe environment. Yeah. And it wasn't in the sense of like, let's say like that scenario of like being drugs or that type of thing, but it was more about, okay, what is it that I want to do in my life? I want to make sure that I take on this opportunity and make the best out of it, and some sacrifices, right?
Yeah.
But
no, that's yeah. For me, it was like also like another one was when we were gonna have the second kid.
Mm.
Like that's when, even though I had a career already going,
okay,
I you know, in my head I'm like, I need to make more money. Like, there's going to be another daycare. There's going to be this and that. And it really, like kicked myself in the butt to kind of get going.
Okay.
More and thinking about, you know, like, moving up and everything. Everything else before that, it was, like, almost like I took it as the things came by. And it's, like, we're going to have a kid. Awesome, you know. Okay. And there was like a thing of it that's like, okay, well, you know, like we weren't doing great,
sure,
but we were doing okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's times where we went to Costco and, you know, they're like, okay, well, the $60 annual fee is due. You know, can you, you know, I was like, well, I can't pay that. So I guess I'm leaving the groceries here. You know, okay, like things point, like that. Yeah. And I was like, okay, you know, we're not doing bad, but like little luxuries like that. It's like, okay, yeah, I can't. We weren't. Well, I wasn't managing my money well either.
Sure.
But like the point being that after like we were gonna have the second kid, I was like, oh, I need to get off my ass and really like get my life better, produce more for my family and all that stuff. And
but you were mentioning that at that stage, like you had already a good career. You were already.
I started already, like in, I think, let me think about this. 2010. It was when Ali was born. In 2014, Shonda was born. So I already started like dabbling into like computers and all that stuff.
Okay.
And so I started like the career of like, okay.
Oh, okay. That's when you were actually starting into that, moving into that path. Okay. Makes sense. Yeah. I'm in a similar situation in a way. We don't have a child yet, but we are planning on maybe a year from now.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like you, I'm thinking about like, you know, all the things that you just don't think about it when it's you.
Yeah.
First of all, you and yourself, and then you and your wife, and now it's kids, it's school areas,
yeah,
and like houses, and you know, better environment.
Meme out there that it's like a guy in a yacht, and it says like, if my kid stops, you know, playing, you know, travel baseball or whatever, right? I won't tell anybody, but there will be signs. It's like, yeah, he finally has a yacht, right? Like, cause it's like there's so much money that goes into those kids,
sure,
kids, but yeah, like, you know, that you don't even think about, you know, it's like, it's yeah, crazy.
It is.
But it is. At the same time, it's all worth it. You know,
I think so too.
It is.
I think so.
You know, like giving them like those opportunities.
Yeah.
And there's like a balance that you have to find between giving them everything and not letting them spoil the kids.
Right. And I like what you said before. Like, there's things that you should, like you said, language, uses of an app. If mm-hmm. you're going to learn something useful, right? It's yeah, like, great. Yeah. Like, I feel like as a parent, I agree with that statement. I will want to be a parent. Yeah. I agree with that statement that if it's something that you agree with and is going to help them a lot,
yeah,
give them all, right?
Yeah.
Like, why not? But if it's something is it might be a distraction, or it just might be just a pass the time, then be mindful.
Yeah.
I think so.
But I think it's also like giving them different challenges that sure, they have to, because us growing up, whether it be like coming to a new country, making new friends, you know, like all this different stuff that we had to accomplish, learning a different language, we had struggles, and those struggles to me are the character builder of who right, we are today, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of times you see this in people who are like, you know, like I'm gonna use air quotes here, but like successful, right, in their field or anything, or have like their life together, like they do that, and then they have the children, and the children become like messed up because it's like they give them everything. But like, if you give them challenges, whether it be, you know, challenges that we got naturally mm-hmm. by, you know, like yeah, immigrating here and all that, or you know, they're not gonna get that, so give them different challenges, whether it be physical challenges to like, okay, well, you know, you have to do a sport and you have to do well and you have to like basically practice all the time,
mm-hmm.
things like that, right? Or languages, like mental challenges, all the stuff. Let them have their own struggles. Is going to become their character builder.
That, and I'm also thinking, because I think about that, my wife and I, we work a lot, right? Like, and so time is limited. And so I'm also thinking that like very successful people, unfortunately, I don't know to what extent they don't spend enough time maybe raising and providing that knowledge, that
I think
wisdom
not
to them.
Having enough time is a cop out.
Yeah.
And I think you, no matter how much you work, because we both work, right? Mm-hmm. Like my wife and I both work, and you know, we always make time for the kids.
Exactly.
Right. And, you know, I volunteer for their scouts, and, you know, they do all these different activities,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether it be jujitsu, soccer, you know, piano, violin, everything like that. And we manage it. And right, at the same time, I have time to like basically play chess and do jujitsu and, you know, lift weights and then go hunting and all that
right,
stuff. It's like, you can make the time, you know, it's how, you know, what sacrifices do you want to make?
Correct.
It's like, what are your priorities?
So what sacrifices do you usually have made? Like when allocating your personal time to the family time, for instance, because I see you and you do have like all these amazing hobbies, right? And it's awesome because
yeah,
you know so many things, you try so many things, right? But like you said, like I'm sure you have had to make other sacrifices that I'm unable to see. So
I don't know, really.
I don't make sacrifices.
No, like the sacrifice is that I don't sit around and watch sports.
Mm, okay.
Like some people like that, you
right,
know, like another, and good for you, like if you do. But that's just not me, right?
Okay.
Like I'm not gonna spend the whole Sunday afternoon like watching three different games from like the European League, the Mexican League, you know, and all that stuff. And or like watching football and all this. I don't do that.
Right? Do you watch like TV series and stuff like that either? Or
like we watch with my wife, like before going to bed, like we'll watch a something, okay. You know, and all that stuff. Or here and there, like as I'm working, I might put something in the background.
Okay. But it's not something like you don't spend that much time frequently like
on TV, watch,
on TV no. And stuff. Okay.
It's mostly podcasts, audiobooks, everything like that. So nice. In that sense, like, I don't know if you call it a sacrifice, but it's something that for me personally, like, I think I save a lot of time.
Right.
Compared to other people. Sure. It's like, I know.
Makes sense.
You know, there's many people who like sports is their life, and that's cool. It's yeah. just not mine, right? Like, or like, they'll want to like sit there and like scroll away their life, you know, like watching yeah. something on their phone and all that stuff. It's like, yeah, I have a, I doom scroll, like, especially like I'm at work, whatever, I need to, you know, wait for something to finish. It's like, you know, I'll scroll away and then watch something and all that stuff. But at the same time, I feel like I manage my time pretty well, where it's like I wake up early in the morning before everybody wakes up. Normally there's like a workout or something. Like Wednesdays now, I started going to this place that has like 5 a.m. jiu-jitsu. Okay. So it's like, okay, go there. Come back, you know, like get shower. I play chess, you know, it's like I dedicate like, okay, 10 minutes for chess. It's like, that's for me, 5 games. Cause I play like 1 minute blitz, you know?
Okay.
Like, so it's like, get that done. It's like, do Duolingo and learn another yeah. language.
Less than
you
5 know, minutes.
Like, this that's that. It. Like you got the streak do going. That, get my streak mm-hmm. going, you know, whatever. But like, you know, like listening to audiobooks and do yeah. that while, you know, while, I work or something like that. So there, it's like I'm managing my time by like breaking it out into mm-hmm. like smaller portions and all this stuff. And then everything else is scheduled, right?
Makes sense. Makes yeah. sense. Yeah, yeah.
So not really sacrifice, but just basically priorities of where you want to spend yeah. your time.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. Right now, I do play sports. I'm playing more sports now. But I had to stop. So I'm living right now in Puerto Rico, and I used to be able to, I used to want and try to go to the beach or a different beach every weekend, just because I love the water. But now I have had to like stop it a little bit because I just have to make sure that my time goes into these yeah. the right things, right? But I still do it. It's just not as often. So that's why I was like, ah, oh, well, that's my sacrifice. And so some weekends I just don't enjoy the beach as much as I would have liked.
Yeah.
But, hey.
No, even, like, going outside, like, we have a pool. Mm-hmm. And even going outside to the pool, like, sometimes I'll be like, all right, I'm going to go, like, and I go one time in the water, and I get out, and I see leaves, and I start, like, doing the leaves, and doing this, and doing that, and it turns into work, and then it just, like...
Pleasure turning into work.
Yeah, like, every time, it's like, oh, my God, like, every time I want to do something, it's like, it just turns into something
into
else.
Something, and, so there, something there, productive.
Yeah, it's productive, it's all that stuff, but there's my sacrifice, right?
There you
like,
go.
I don't get to spend that much time, like laying down, you know, that I do. But I do have a lot of hobbies. I like to do a lot of things, and, you know, either that's awesome. I have the time for it or I don't. I mean, for the past couple of weeks, like both my buddy and I have been like in different schedules and we weren't able to like make a podcast or a workout happen, you know, but other than that, you know, I try to make it happen.
That's
you
awesome.
Know, when I,
yeah.
Well, Jorge, I think that's a good way to wrap it up.
Appreciate it, though.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.